Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, in for Kathleen Dunn this hour. It's 6.5 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Friday, April the 25th. This week, the New York Times disclosed an investigation that raises a lot of questions about the media's role as a conduit for Pentagon propaganda. Maybe you read this piece on the Pentagon pundits and have some comments on whether or not the media have been helping the administration in its Iraq propaganda effort. We're going to talk with a guest this hour who says, well, apparently so, and we'll wonder how important this is and what can be done about it. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please note that you're hearing different numbers as we are broadcasting today from Madison and not from Milwaukee. But we welcome your participation as we talk about this piece in the New York Times about how the Pentagon had a program to feed talking points to the military pundits featured on all those cable channels and other TV news programs. Our guest is Isabel McDonald, Communications Director for FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, a national media watchdog group, and she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, and good morning to your listeners in Wisconsin.
Well, we appreciate you being with us. Go over the facts covered in the New York Times piece first, if you will.
All right. So basically what this New York Times report last Sunday's newspaper revealed was just the extent of a Pentagon program to feed talking points to retired generals who, if anybody had been watching cable or broadcast networks in the lead-up to the Iraq War or in the 5 years of the war, these generals will be very familiar faces to you. And so the Times revealed that these generals had actually, retired generals, had been participating in a program where they were being briefed by the Pentagon. They were being taken on trips, paid for by the Pentagon in some cases, to Iraq. And they were using this access to government officials to provide information to the public via the media. However, through extensive interviews with some of these retired generals who participated in the program, the Times revealed just the extent to which they saw themselves as facilitating the Pentagon's spin about the Iraq War. In one case, there was one general who talked about how who had actually asked the Pentagon if they wanted him to downplay any mm-hmm. news on TV and asked their opinion of what he should emphasize. So, I mean, this is the kind of information that TV viewers were getting from these military analysts. It was really straight from the mouth of the Pentagon. And another shocking set of details that were revealed in this article were the extent to which these retired generals who were featured as military analysts on TV and provided Pentagon talking points to the public were also deeply embedded financially with military contractors. So in Times said over that there were more than 150 military contractors that were represented in this group mm-hmm. of analysts who were featured as TV pundits being fed information by the Pentagon. And so they were involved either as lobbyists, senior executives, board members, or consultants in the military contracting industry. So shocking conflicts of interest also really emerged because these retired generals who were commenting on the war on cable and broadcast networks were also benefiting from these very war policies that they were being asked to comment on as experts.
Yeah.
And the real problem is that TV viewers were never told about these conflicts of interest. There was no disclaimer. And in the Times article, it was clear that the Times journalist who wrote the piece, David Barstow, had asked the networks about this, and they refused to comment on what their process for vetting these so-called analysts was. Really shocking details about the kind of propaganda that Americans have been getting about the Iraq War through these retired generals who were basically just regurgitating Pentagon talking points.
Well, how do we, let's talk a little bit more about that first, whether they're just regurgitating talking points or if they're getting briefed and they're taking in this information in part of their own analysis. How do we know they're just regurgitating talking points?
Well, in the case of it wasn't across the board, but in the case of some of the retired generals, it was very clear that they were saying what the Pentagon wanted them to say, and there were penalties if they raised questions about the Iraq War.
Yeah, didn't somebody
that
get
were inconvenient? They would lose their access. Mm-hmm. So basically, their status as military analysts hinged on the access that they had to information from the Pentagon. And as soon as they started to be critical, they were dismissed. So it was very clear that the Pentagon had a policy of providing negative feedback and ultimately cutting off access for any retired generals who were saying something that they didn't like, even if it was true.
Yeah. And I guess the Pentagon and retired generals can do whatever they want together, but isn't the real culprit here the TV stations that put the retired generals on the air as military analysts?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And this is really what fairness and accuracy in reporting has been emphasizing, because the success of this Pentagon information operation directed at the American people really hinged on the decisions that were made by the media to feature these ex-generals. This was a very conscious policy in the lead up to the Iraq War, where we even had at CNN CNN's former chief news executive had actually stated that he went to the Pentagon himself before the war started and had met with important people there and had said, here are the generals we're thinking of retaining to advise us on the air and off the air about the Iraq War. And he himself said that they got a big thumbs up. CNN got a thumbs up from the Pentagon for all of these generals that they wanted to have commenting on the Iraq War. So, I mean, the extent to which the cable and broadcast networks were complicit, not wittingly, but complicit in that they made these decisions to stack their airwaves mm-hmm. with these retired generals, really can't be overstated.
Yeah. So what does FAIR think should happen regarding this?
Well, the key thing for us at FAIR is to make sure that this can't happen again. Mm-hmm. And I think that the revelations about the extent of the problem revealed by the New York Times article gives us an opportunity to really call on the cable and broadcast networks to take action to make sure that this kind of thing can't happen again. And the very first thing that we think should happen is that these networks should expand the range of independent sources who provide commentary on the war, because part of the problem was that there just wasn't a counterbalance to the analysis that was being provided by these generals who were being ex-generals who were being fed Pentagon talking points. We did a study in the lead up to the war that found that 74 in the weeks just before and just after the war, something like 74% of sources were government officials or former government officials or retired generals, mm-hmm. spokespeople or other spokespeople for the military. And it was, and there were almost no anti-war voices who were represented. So when you have that kind of an imbalance in sourcing on in at these networks, it really, if the Pentagon chooses to make use of this access that retired generals have to make sure they're saying the right thing according to the Pentagon, it makes this kind of disinformation much more likely. If there had been more of a counterbalance in the first place, where you had real independent sources who were providing a counterpoint, we wouldn't have had the extent of this misinformation. And I think one thing that is really significant to consider with this Times article was that when we're talking about Pentagon talking points being passed off, one of the really significant bits of information that we saw being left out in the early days of the Iraq War was the fact that Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction, counter to the claims of the Bush administration. And it was revealed by one of the generals who was interviewed in the Times article that the ex-generals had actually been briefed by the Pentagon on the fact that there was no evidence of weapons of mass destruction. And this was something that never made it onto the air. So I think that is really significant, mm-hmm. because it's vital information that is being withheld from the American public. And the Pentagon has played a part in this, but so have the American media, who decided to have on these analysts who for reason business interests, and also because they are so closely tied to the military, all of their colleagues are part of the military. So they're the people that you'd expect to be least critical of the Pentagon's efforts. And furthermore, the Pentagon was making sure that they would be denied access if they said anything out of line. So the fact that it was these analysts that the networks were relying on to provide analysis of the war is really an abdication of their responsibilities to the public.
Yeah. And what about, are you calling for any changes in the way various media outlets, or especially, you know, national broadcast news outlets, disclose any potential conflict of interest of their guests and or their paid consultants?
Well, yeah, where our call to action is just broadly that the cable and broadcast networks need to make sure that this can't happen again. But that is a very minimum. Is better attention to policies of disclosure. I mean, it's certain that there were some violations that went on. There was one general who was interviewed in the Times. There was a case of a general who was dismissed by CNN after, and this was talked about in the Times article, after it was revealed that he had very serious financial conflicts of interest the whole 3 years that he was providing analysis for CNN. I mean, the question is how this could have happened for 3 years in the case of CNN, and how it could still be going on today in the case of many of the networks. And the failure of the media to look carefully at the financial stakes that their source, these key sources they were using and also paying for commentary, had with the industry that they were supposed to be commenting on as experts is really shocking. And there definitely need to be changes in policies around vetting expert sources.
We're talking with Isabel McDonald, Communications Director for FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, a national media watchdog group which is commenting on this piece that was in the New York Times earlier this week, the New York Times investigation of the Pentagon, showing that the Pentagon was feeding talking points to the military pundits, the retired generals and the like, featured on TV newscasts. on cable and broadcast TV. And FAIR is asking that these broadcast networks take action to ensure that the news will no longer serve as a conduit for Pentagon talking points, and also calling on the networks to expand the range of independent sources who provide commentary on the war. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, in for Kathleen Dunn this hour. Coming up after 10 o'clock, Jim Packard, in for Kathleen Dunn, talking with the author of A Treasury of Foolishly Forgotten Americans. There'll be people that history almost made famous, but turns out they are mostly forgotten. So sounds like a fun hour coming up after 10 o'clock. We are talking with Isabel McDonald, who is Communication Director for FAIR. And our first caller on this topic is Chris in Milwaukee. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Good morning. You know, this has been going on for a lot of wars. I read a historical novel by an author that's out of print talking about, it was about munitions manufacturers and how they would get editorials. And, you know, before there was TV and radio, people were putting editorials and articles in newspapers and stirring up anger against the other country and then putting articles in newspapers in the other country and doing it about the first country, and that's how you get wars started. I've been reading Charlie Wilson's War, and they talked about the CIA putting articles in different, I think it was Iraq and Iran. This is going on all the time. It's just that people, every generation, you get a new bunch of people that don't know that this stuff is happening.
Yeah, nothing new, Isabel McDonald?
Well, I think what's different here, it's true that in terms of the pattern that has been revealed and the pattern that we're particularly concerned about at FAIR in terms of the media's role in facilitating this propaganda, it really ties into a longstanding pattern that we've seen of network and cable news relying on retired generals for commentary and media and for analysis about the conduct of wars. And in the past, this has contributed to very one-sided and very imbalanced coverage, and has also served to cover up more critical perspectives. So in terms of that's one thing that we've seen that is really actually not a new pattern. And even in terms of some of the documentation of the conflict of interest that some of these ex-generals had, a lot of this was actually revealed, not in so much detail, but some of the key points were actually revealed by The Nation magazine in an article that they published in 2003, April of 2003, particularly in terms of the way that the retired generals were both serving as key players in the lobby for defense contractors, while also commenting on the war on TV. So, in terms of whether there's anything really new, I think what is new is perhaps the extent to which the media has actually finished off the job that the listener who just called in was talking about, where in the past we have seen that the government has planted false stories. There were cases of this in Iraq, certainly, where in the current war, where there were Iraqi newspapers that were being given money by the Pentagon. And there have been cases of the CIA hiring journalists to do their bidding. But in this case, it was the American media that are supposed to be independent that have actually really delivered these Pentagon talking points through the retired generals to the public. So I think that this crosses a new line, because you would expect that information being put out by the government would be propaganda. If the government is coming up with information to make its the conduct of its war look good, that is by definition propaganda. If it's not identified as coming from the government, if it's sort of dressed up as something that is supposed to fool people into believing it's independent.
But what's happened
here is that the media, without any, I mean, have of themselves made a decision to rely on people who were carrying out a Pentagon propaganda operation. So I think that there is something that is new here that provides us with an opportunity to try and call for changes in media practices that have been going on for a long time that have facilitated this particular outrage.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I did want to bring up that on the Nation's website, on a blog, the Nation that you brought up comments on this story and then says, spreading covert propaganda is illegal under federal law, as a new campaign by our friends at Free Press are reminding us. Therefore, Congress must investigate these military pundits, their ties to the Bush administration, defense contractors, and our national news media. Calling for a congressional investigation.
Yeah, I think, and this is completely against the law for the government to engage in propagandizing the American public. Domestic propaganda is outlawed. So it does really raise some questions, and it will be interesting to see what happens in light of the calls for an inquiry. But as a media watch group, what FAIR is really concerned with is the fact that it was the media that facilitated these ex-generals being on air and having a platform in the national media to deliver what may turn out to be illegal domestic propaganda, depending on how this congressional inquiry goes.
I'm going to take another caller, Robert in McFarland. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, all media is nothing but marketing and propaganda, and it took me an entire semester to figure that out when I knew it day one, where I had to sit in a class at the university and listen to this just to come to that conclusion that really it's all propaganda and marketing. There isn't a whole lot of difference between the two. The New York Times was more instrumental in ushering in this war. I remember very distinctly the politicians saying, we need the press's help in this thing. They're not naive. They're not foolish. There are some other problems with having people come out of schools with $40,000 or $50,000 loans to be journalists and then asking them to be objective. Their editors aren't objective. Some of their editors aren't even from this country. So if people are going and listening to this fixed noise that drowns out everybody else's daily life, and it does, on 5-second and 10-second sound bites generated by, I don't care whether it's generated by the Lear Hour or who it's generated by, it's all propaganda. And it's generally controlled by all the same sources, the people that control the money. Now, this was definitely a propaganda. Colin Powell sat there and showed a shed with no sides on it. The UN didn't believe it. He showed an old vehicle and said that was a biological weapons thing that they knew about. They showed camps that weren't true. Now, this is pure propaganda. Now, this guy's not being charged with any crimes. He screwed up about three other things when he was in the military. He got $30 million for speaking after the first miniature Gulf War, and he made that money, and that's why he came back and did what he did. He's bought and paid for just like everybody else. So when you're putting people in uniforms and you're acting like they have some kind of credibility, you've never been around the military and you don't realize how much these clowns are paid to retire and then to go to Washington and be shuffled around to run organizations into the ground, basically. And when they don't work, another one of the clowns comes along and gets paid to run another organization into the ground.
Oh, can I get you to link this, though, to this?
I'm linking it to this. You've got a country of stupid people that want things delivered on the web. It's even shorter attention span. They want it delivered in 4 seconds. They want to be told how to think. And if you're not going to educate the population, and you're going to hold their health care, their unemployment benefits, their workman's comp benefits, and everything tied to Uncle Sam, they couldn't dare tell the truth. And if you're only going to let one news outlet, the New York Times, filter everything into the United States and say they're the only trusted people, you haven't read their mission statement, evidently.
Well, all right. So what do you say to that, Isabel McDonald?
Well, certainly the role of the very first point the very first point that you made in terms of the role of the New York Times in leading the country into war, I mm-hmm. think that's a very important point. The New York Times did publish unsubstantiated official claims that turned out to be lies on its cover. This about weapons of mass destruction. So I think that certainly the role of the New York Times should not be. I mean, we shouldn't think of the New York Times as in a glowing light when it comes to to disinformation that has served to make the case for war. Because certainly that newspaper played a crucial role in misinformation. And the other thing that has come to light since the publication of the article is that the Times itself had quoted these retired generals who were part of the Pentagon Talking Points program quite extensively over the course of the war. And as the Times article, the original Times article last Sunday itself reported, there were 9 op-eds that had been published by the Times that were written by these ex-generals. So certainly there are problems with the media system as a whole, which, as our listener just pointed out, are related to ownership, the pressures that journalists face, often in part due to pressures from owners who have business interests, sometimes in war policies, like in the case of General Electric, which is a major defense contractor, which owns NBC. There are all kinds of conflicts that are there just when you have the media being owned by such large corporations with such vested interests in war.
Yeah, let me move on to another caller. Rich and Sullivan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Joy, I know from many years of listening to you that you are lovely. Your guest, whom I'm just hearing today, sounds lovely as well. I am not. Neither was Harry S. Truman after World War II. He held congressional hearings on war profiteering. War profiteering is when you make money off of war. This war has been so largely privatized, and there is no detailed accounting of where money has gone, that I classify what these generals did, along with other people in this administration, as treasonous. That is, you do not send young people, or in this war, middle-aged people, into war, and then in this age call it misinformation or distortion of information, when really what it is suppression of evidence of what is going on. These people should be, in my view, taken before a firing squad and shot after they are tried for treasonous acts.
Well, Rich, thank you for the lovely compliments. I don't know, Isabel McDonald, if you want to comment on what the generals did, if that was treason.
I really am not, my area is media criticism, so
right.
This is, to me, it's a little bit too far afield, but I think it does, certainly this there is widespread discontent with the war, and bringing it back to the media, I think there is real discontent right now with the way that the media have failed to investigate what have been really really outrageous corrupt practices that have been central in the conduct of the war.
Yes.
And in terms of the point about the way that the war has been privatized, I think that this is really really key. And I would say that it's not just in the failure to thoroughly investigate the war profiteering that has been going on as part of this privatized war, but also what we've seen is that the fighting of the war has been largely there has been a overwhelming shift to a reliance on private military contractors, and we have seen that that has not been reported as much as you would have expected, given the scale of private military contractors who are engaged in fighting of the war. And just in terms of casualties, for instance, we rarely hear, when we talk about American casualties of the Iraq War, we rarely hear about the private contractors, or when we talk about the deaths associated with the Iraq War, which is an important part of the cost, we rarely hear about the deaths of private contractors. So I think that this is a way of downplaying the cost of the war in terms of human lives.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, Isabel, if you want to comment on, we had a caller in the last hour on this network talking about the news of the week, and someone brought up, why haven't we really heard anything more than this article? Really thinking that that this has been ignored by the media, the Pentagon program of feeding the talking points to the pundits. What do you think? Do you think this has been undercovered in the media, the story since it broke in the New York Times?
I think that this is the kind of story that requires some. It requires investigation. Mm-hmm. The New York Times sued the Pentagon to get this information, mm-hmm. and I think that we're living in a time where, in the wake of a lot of cuts to newsroom budgets, there's less by way of staff resources and money that a lot of news organizations are willing to invest in doing this kind of critical investigation that is really essential, as we see, because this is obviously a very significant story. So I think that is one part of the answer. But then at the same time, I think that I'd really like to go back to the fact that The Nation had actually broken part of this story back in mm-hmm. 2003, and I think it's a real indictment of the news media that there wasn't more follow up after the The Nation article was quite remarkable and included interviews with some network executives who had justified their reliance on these ex generals who at the time were the Nation was revealing to be deeply embedded with military contractors, and there was very little response from the network executives that the Nation interviewed about this, and there wasn't a lot of pickup in other media. So I think that there's a real question of why, even with the information that was known, that was revealed by the Nation article, why there was not more follow-up.
Michael in Madison writes this email wanting you to comment on his observation. Anyone who Googles the phrase, who owns the media, will quickly learn that almost all the media is owned by only five corporations, most of them with direct ties to the military-industrial complex.
That's a very good point. Mm. I think that there's the issue of ownership that is very mm-hmm. critical. There's also the symbiotic relationship between journalists and official sources, which is created by the pressure of deadlines that journalists face as they have to scramble to deliver a product to. By a certain deadline every day, and in the wake of cuts to newsroom budgets, it makes it even more likely that journalists will be forced to rely on information that is delivered to them by press releases uncritically. So that's another factor, and with these pressures, there also comes a fear of being cut off from access, because, as we saw with the Times article, the retired generals who were part of the Pentagon program would lose access if they said anything critical on air. They would lose access to the Pentagon officials that they relied upon for their information that gave them the status of being military of being military analysts, and they gave them paychecks for going on air to comment on the war. And it's actually similar with journalists. Government officials will cut journalists off if they are reporting on stories that are inconvenient to the interests to government interests.
Yeah.
So I think that there's also that also contributes to the kind of symbiotic relationship between a lot of media organizations and official government sources, where you want to be able to maintain access to these privileged sources. So you have to some extent, it's hard to be very critical. So we also have the pressure of advertising, which is another huge factor.
Yeah, let me jump in because we're past our break time to remind listeners that we are talking with Isabel McDonald, Communications Director for FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, a national media watchdog group. FAIR commenting on this story that was in the New York Times on Sunday, revealing the Pentagon's hidden hand behind all those TV military analysts. And we welcome your thoughts and questions for her at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joy Cardine in for Kathleen Dunn. Jim Packard will be in for Kathleen Dunn after 10 o'clock. Can you recall John Billington, Anne Bonny, or Stephen Pleasanton's place in history? Well, neither can I. And Jim and his guest will take a look at history's almost famous but mostly forgotten folks coming up after 10. We are talking about the Pentagon pundit story with Isabel McDonald, Communications Director for FAIR. Our next caller is Aaron in Egg Harbor. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. A fantastic show. I think you should repeat the show over and over again and just all take a nice vacation. And
okay, well, why do you think it's important?
Well, I think the veil is finally coming over what's been happening. I think the BBC should take over so we clean up our media. The first Bush had a similar false allegations. People came before Congress and lied to the buildup of that war. And anybody who profits from war, their morality should be looked at. I can't imagine making profit off of people dying.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go to the media part of that. Should the BBC take over until we can clean everything up, Isabel McDonald?
Well, I think that the model, I mean, I don't know about the BBC taking over the American media. I think that would probably be quite a controversial move. And I think there are a lot of talented American journalists who already do great work here in the United States. I think that the problem is really the ownership structures in this country. The model of the BBC is interesting because it's publicly financed radio and TV, and people actually have a license fee that they pay if they own a television set in the United Kingdom that goes towards supporting the BBC's programming, which is certainly, I mean, it's an interesting alternative that I think is worth discussing. But there are a lot of countries that don't necessarily have that kind of a licensing fee, but that do have taxpayer-funded public media that is much more heavily funded than NPR, what we have here, Wisconsin Public Radio, for instance, and PBS, which are the public media in the United States, and that provides a buffer from financial interests that creep into programming when you have a reliance on advertising.
Yeah, let me bring in a caller just on that very point, since she's been waiting quite some time. Betsy in River Falls, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I've waited a long time, not just today, to put in this plug for Wisconsin Public Radio. The people that, the information that we got before the war went on happened from, you know, Greg Palast and Scott Ritter. And those of us who listen to Wisconsin Public Radio intelligently and often know that we did get alternatives and know that there was no, you know, we just had great sources of information saying this is all a hoax and this is all a lie and there are no weapons of mass destruction from the people who were actually on the ground looking for them. So rah-rah Wisconsin Public Radio, and if our Congress and Senate and Hillary Clinton had been able to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, they would have voted differently. So rah-rah us.
Well, rah-rah us, Betsy. I didn't know that it was going to be so complimentary, Isabel. I thought it was public radio in general. But I will say that Wisconsin Public Radio does try to provide all sorts of different voices. But you know what? We don't have the audience that CNN and MSNBC and ABC and all these cable and network TV channels have.
Yeah, and what's interesting in the case of the audiences of ABC and NBC and CBS, because they are using, like Wisconsin Public Radio, they are using the public airwaves, which is not the case in terms of cable, but is the case in terms of those broadcast networks. And in many countries, there are much more rigorous protections for the public interest so that you would be able to hold those networks to account if they were not providing information that was vital to a functioning democracy. So I think that there are policy questions that come up with when you see media that are using the public airwaves and not providing information that is vital to people understanding about matters as crucial as going into war.
Yep. Betsy, thank you so much for the very nice call. Bill in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, thank you. You sort of touched on the point that, you know, you can, a broadcast network that is operating in contrary to the public interest can always have its free, you know, access to the airwaves taken away, because the access to the airwaves is public property. But CNN, as far as I know, CNN or any of the other cable news networks, they're not obligated to anyone except their stockholders. I mean, they don't really even have to pretend to be fair and objective or operating in the public interest. They're operating in the interest of their stockholders. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's bad, but that's the system we operate under here in the United States, and I don't see what we can do to stop that.
Yeah. What about that, Isabel?
Well, it's true. Most media organizations, with the exception of public media and independent. The truly independent media that operate on a not-for-profit basis are owned by large corporations, which are obliged under law to put the interests of their shareholders above all else, to put interests of shareholder profits first. So if you have organizations that are responsible for providing the news that are obliged under law to put profits first, that obviously creates problems for the kind of information that the public is going to get. In terms of whether we really can't do anything with even the cable outlets like CNN, I don't think that's true. I think that what we've seen since FAIR was founded in 1986 is that there has been a growing savviness amongst the population about the fact that the media is not providing reliable information. And I think that this can translate into a lot of cynicism, but I think this also has the more hopeful vein of this has been increased media criticism that we've seen in the rise of hundreds and hundreds of blogs that are taking these networks on, which I think is very hopeful. There's also been a tremendous growth of truly independent media stations that are broadcasting with an explicit mandate of programming in the public interest. And there have been an alternative media like Democracy Now, which is a show that's broadcast, originally comes out of the Pacifica Network, but is listened to online and watched online by many people in this country and increasingly in Latin America as well. Mm-hmm. I think is an example of the kind of programming that we can have now facilitated by the internet that provide a very alternative point of view. And so I think that independent media should be, we should also look to independent media as, and support independent media as a way of countering the power of the corporate media. I think that's very important.
Next, we go to Betty in Milwaukee. Hi, Betty. You're on the air.
Well, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say that I really agree with what was happening with CNN. To the lead up to the Iraq War, I was doing a lot of daily exercises watching television, and I could not believe how there was no debate and discussion about whether we should go to war. Instead, all the news items were like press releases from the White House, and that it was just constantly about when and how. And I was eventually, like, when we finally invaded, which it certainly was an invasion, illegal, and when we finally did it, it was like, thank God it's over with, because all there was in this country, there was no debate. It was just, well, when are we going to do it? And I just think it's atrocious that some, whatever media or independence or whatever, everybody was silent, and we just sort of allowed this administration to marshal this entire event, and there was no debate. There was no democratic debate. And I just want to say I agree with that. It was totally manipulated.
Yeah, and your study at FAIR showed that to be the case too, Isabel.
Yeah, and I think it wasn't the case. There was no debate in the media, but there was outside of the media. Yeah. There was a lot of debate, and there was a lot of dissent, and there were huge protests in the United States and around the world in the month before the invasion. So the fact that the media overwhelmingly marginalized and excluded anti-war voices was all the more appalling.
Yeah. I have an email from Merritt in Kewaunee. Just when I think I've reached a level of cynicism where this administration can't surprise me, something like this propaganda scheme emerges. This is outrageous and fundamentally un-American. Besides writing to my representatives, what can the average person do to make sure this propaganda program is fully understood, widely reported, and some action is taken to keep it from continuing?
Well, there are actually a lot of online petitions right now. I know that Free Press has one calling for the congressional investigation. So maybe it sounds like you maybe have already tapped into that. What we're calling for people to do at FAIR is to write to the media outlets that had these retired generals who were feeding the public Pentagon talking points on air consistently throughout the Iraq War. And we have if you go to FAIR's website, it's www.fair.org, so FAIR.org. Mm-hmm. We have contact information for all of these networks, and we're calling on people to take action to contact those networks and put pressure on them to make sure that this cannot happen again, for them to actually make changes in their policies so that it's not possible for this kind of thing to ever happen again.
Yeah, so are these briefings between the Pentagon and the analysts, are they over now, or is this something that still happens from time to time?
You know, this is a very good question, mm-hmm. because it certainly didn't, I don't think that there was anything in the article about how the program had now stopped.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, certainly I think it has caused some embarrassment to the Pentagon, but it will be interesting to see how they proceed. I mean, they may just be. I really can't comment on that, but that's a very good question.
Yeah, we are almost out of time, but one quick call from Steve in Houston, Texas, apparently listening online. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, you know, I agree. It's very, very sad. I listened to Wesley Clark and the other retired generals, And it's almost like they're trying to sell their books, you know, on the cable television. It's always just the one side of the story, and it's very sad. But with regards to our foreign policy, I see, especially in the print media and ABC, CBS, NBC, Evening News, almost no coverage with respect to our foreign policy interests. Give one example. James Baker wrote an excellent article, our net foreign secretary, former Secretary of State,
I don't want to change the subject, Steve. I'm sorry, I can't change the subject. But how about just the lopsided coverage in general on our from our media, Isabel?
I think it's very clear that there has been. I mean, in the history of war reporting, I think that there's generally been very lopsided mm-hmm. coverage in times of war, and I think that. Hopefully, this exposure of the fact that this lopsided coverage was actually used by the Pentagon to spread propaganda to the American public will prompt some kind of rethinking at the level of the media about mm-hmm. who they choose as their analysts for commentary on the war.
Yeah.
Because what we've seen in the past is that. They've consistently sort of deferred to these retired generals, and actually in
right. And I'm going to have to leave it there because yeah. we're at the end of the hour. I want to thank you very much for being with us today.
You're very welcome,
Isabel. Isabel McDonald, Communications Director for FAIR. You can get more information at FAIR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.